I'm glad to be back again with the Epiphany story. It's a great story, the one Bruce just read for us from Matthew, a story only found in Matthew's account. The word Epiphany, as you likely know, of course, describes a moment of sudden revelation or insight when we arrive at a place of clarity and certainty. In Western Christian liturgical tradition, Epiphany officially celebrated on January 6th, a day, by the way, which we now unfortunately have to remember as an anniversary of violent terrorist insurrection in this country, immediately follows the 12 days of Christmas, right? Those are real things. It's not just a song. The 12 days of Christmas conclude on January 5th, Epiphany, January 6th. And Epiphany commemorates the revelation of God's presence manifested, incarnate, in the flesh, in the child Jesus, Son of God, Emmanuel, God with us. Revelation, as Matthew's story indicates, to the Gentile magi in the original Greek, the foreign astrologers, the sages, as Will Gaffney's translation puts it. Traditionally understood as three wise men, though to be sure, there is no biblical basis for there being three, or grammatical basis in the original language that they were necessarily all men. Just saying. Epiphany commemorates this dramatic visit of the Magi, the sages, to the place where Jesus was born. And more broadly, Epiphany also commemorates the baptism of Jesus as God's beloved, typically celebrated on the first Sunday, this first Sunday following January 6th. And the first miracle as well that Jesus performed, turning water into wine at the wedding at Cana, as described in the Gospel of John. Those events, those three events, further revealing Jesus's divine identity to the world. Epiphany. We don't know how these sages got word of Jesus's birth, or at least how or why a star of all things was assigned for them about this particular child being born. We don't know why they traveled to Jerusalem looking for him, or why they felt compelled to reverence him. This is the tone set by the author of Matthew's gospel, a tone of intrigue and mystery, with the baby Jesus, the Christ child, very much at the center of it all. The author wants us to see Jesus, even as a newborn baby, attracting the attention both of Jewish priests and religious leaders and non-Jewish sages and kings. Sages mysteriously drawn to him, a king curiously afraid, threatened by him, already referred to as King of the Judeans, a title found only in the Gospels and a title given already to King Herod by the Emperor Augustus. So that political tension is very much in play in the story, and that political threat comes into play here with Herod's ultimately unsuccessful attempt to find and kill this baby Jesus. And as we know, it will come into play again at Jesus's arrest and crucifixion. This is the charge, right, against Jesus as King of the Judeans, King of the Jews. The road the sages travel to find the newborn Jesus is revealed to them by the star at its ascent, the star rising and ultimately stopping, we're told, exactly over the place where Jesus was born in Bethlehem. We know what happens after that with their rejoicing, with their gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh, that they've come all that way to deliver. But I'm drawn this time around the Epiphany story to the road they travel to get back home. We know that Herod, from the story, asked them to return to him after they find Jesus so that they can tell him where he is, right? And Herod says, well, I want to reverence him too. But we know, as the story goes on, we don't know at that moment, and they don't know at that point, that Herod intends to kill him. And so, warned in a dream, they don't go back to Herod. They don't go back the way they came. They go by another road. The road less traveled, the road that literally changes the narrative. I love that dreams are the thread that hold Matthew's birth narrative together. As we explored a few weeks ago before Christmas, Joseph is visited by an angel in a dream before Jesus is born, affirming the courageous, faithful role that Joseph will play as Mary's husband and as Jesus's stepfather. And then we get this dream of the sages prompting them to leave for their own country by another road. And then Joseph has two more divine dreams following, one directing the Holy Family to flee to Egypt to avoid Herod's murderous plot, and the other directing them to return from Egypt long after King Herod's death. So maybe there's something to be found in these stories, in this story of the sages, the Magi, about letting our dreams guide our steps, letting our dreams set our courses, letting our divine dreams, you know what I'm talking about, the ones revealed in the deepest parts of ourselves where love takes root and flourishes, letting those dreams direct us in the way to go. We live in a world, do we not, where the roads we travel are so often determined by and so limited by reality as it is, as we know it, by the status quo, by prevailing and often false narratives, by assumptions that we make or others make about us, by cultural rules and religious doctrines, by social and economic expectations and pressures, by the confines of capitalism, say, and the destructive soul-sucking emphasis on individual security and advancement at the expense of the common good, or by social and political division, conflict, violence, by social location, wherever it is that we are located, by racial and economic privilege or lack thereof, by gender and gender normative and heteronormative privilege or lack thereof. On and on, we live in a world where the roads we travel are often determined by and limited by reality as we know it. We can easily get stuck traveling those same roads over and over again, roads dictated by forces outside ourselves, predictable roads, roads we know whether we like them or not, roads that lead us down the same old storylines. It makes sense. It's practical, right? For many, for most, even it's a necessary matter of survival. But this time around the Epiphany story, I hear the divine invitation not to settle for the predictable roads, the roads we usually take or even always take, the ones that lead us back again and again to the status quo in our own lives and in our relationships and in our communities and in the world, to the way things are and so presumably always will be, to the realities we've come to accept as foregone and final. Maybe that's the invitation, the revelation to be found in the Epiphany story, to take the road less traveled, to find our individual and collective way home by another road, and to do so by daring to follow the dreams, deep down dreams that lead us there, that lead us forward and not back, that lead us to love more fully and consistently, that lead us to change the narrative. Because in order to change the way things are, we have to go a different way. Love is the way to love. Peace is the way to peace. Justice is the way to justice. These are the dreams we have for ourselves in our own lives, for how we want to be in the world, the dreams we have for our families and for our friends, for our relationships and our communities and our congregations, the dreams we have for this city, for our country, for the world, for the planet. Dreams for restorative justice and lasting peace. Dreams where everyone has enough, where no one is hungry or unhoused or alone. Dreams where everyone has space and opportunity to live into their dreams. As Reverend Dr. William Barber often says in co-directing the National Poor People's Campaign, forward together, not one step back. Forward together, not one step back. You see him, if he speaks at rallies, he'll just say this over and over again and get everybody chanting the same thing. Forward together, not one step back. Forward together, not one step back. Not one step back toward the way we came, the way we always go, the way of self-fulfilling prophecy that can only take us back to the way things are, and so the way they will inevitably always be. But forward together toward the way of love, toward the world as it should be for all people and all creation as God intends. This is our epiphany, friends. Dream together, to love together, forward together, home together. This is our covenant with God. This, in fact, is the way of Christ, the way still today, so threatening to the powers that be and to the status quo. Now, I want to acknowledge here that I'm not being particularly concrete. This is the challenge in preaching of preaching this what can be interpreted as sort of Pollyannish, like we just need to love each other more, right? To love as Jesus did, as God commands us to do, and everything will be better. I acknowledge that I am not being concrete. I'm not taking the time this morning to share concrete examples, but if you think about it, we all know those examples. So I would invite you later today, this week, to bring those examples to mind, to think of experiences where you have, or to think of people you know or know of who have refused to concede to reality, to the way things are, and instead let the dream of what might yet be lead and make the way forward until the dream becomes reality, at least in part, in big and small ways. To bring those examples to mind, and while you're at it, bring to mind your dreams for yourself and your life, for your relationships, for your neighborhoods, for the world. And this epiphany, may you, like the Magi, be the ones wise enough to pay attention to your dreams. May we be the ones courageous enough to go where our dreams, all of which are part of God's dream, lead us. May we travel the roads and be the roads that ultimately change the narrative. May our revelation lead to revolution. As Jan Richardson offers in Blessing, I close. May the path that Christ walks to bring justice upon the earth, to bring light to those who sit in darkness, to bring out those who live in bondage, to bring new things to all creation. May this path run through our life, my life. May I be the road Christ takes. May it be so.